And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio. And opening up tonight in the engine room at Art Station, it's a new production of Center Stage of Aaron Sorkin's A Few Good Men. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios are Daniel Salazar, Annie Funky, and Blaine Weaver. They're going to tell us all about this new production. Welcome, folks.
Hey, thanks for having us.
So let's go in. You know, most people have probably seen the film, and it's a well-known film, and of course it's always coming back on television, so it comes around quite regularly. But let's go into the beginning. Aaron Sorkin wrote this back in the late 80s. Can you tell us a little bit about how he came about the inspiration?
I believe Annie has the story behind that.
Yeah, well, from what I've heard, Aaron Sorkin's sister was actually in the Navy JAG Corps, and I guess she gave him a call one day that she was working on a case out of Guantanamo Bay about a hazing that had gone awry, and it kind of inspired A Few Good Men. And he was actually working at a Broadway theater as a bartender serving drinks, and so after the show would start, he would get the napkins out on the bar and just start writing on the napkins, and that's kind of where A Few Good Men came from.
And it was also the start of Aaron Sorkin's like storied career. Like, he went from this to The American President, to West Wing, to Social Network, to, oh my goodness, like, he's one of the most prolific writers working today.
Yeah.
He's got To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway right now, actually, which is the highest grossing stage play in Broadway history.
Yeah. So it seems being a bartender on Broadway is like where
it
you
paid
get your
off. I guess it paid off for Aaron Sorkin.
You know, I can speak from experience that it doesn't always work out that way.
Okay. But you do meet some interesting characters.
Oh, sure.
You can't help it.
You know, and you know, they end up in your plays, you know.
Right.
So. Exactly.
So, the play was written in 1989. Now, the original play is slightly different than what we know now because of the film. Can you go into a little of the nuances of the differences?
Well, Rob Reiner directed the film, and Aaron Sorkin actually wrote the screenplay for it. So he did all of the changes himself, and I'm sure it was based on, you know, the requirements of cinema. Like, let's have a scene outside, maybe.
Right.
But then after the movie came out, it was so successful, and I guess Sorkin was happy with the changes that he made, that he kind of integrated them into the play. So the play that we're doing this weekend is incredibly similar to the movie. Of course, it's going to be way better.
One of the famous "You Can't Handle the Truth" was actually not in the original script.
Oh, really?
So that was something that was added after, I guess, the success of the movie and Jack Nicholson's inspiring performance, and you know, that's kind of the moment people are waiting for. So I guess they thought, if we're going to put this back out on stage, we better give the people what they want.
You know, and Nicholson was quoted as saying, "That's probably one time that $5 million was well spent, was just for that line."
Just for that line. And the stories about him, you know, on set, he was only there, I think, for a couple of weeks, but he finished his courtroom scene, that big scene in the courtroom that's, you know, 17 minutes long, and from what I've heard from several different cast members' interviews is that he stayed like 2 extra days to finish that scene for everyone else's coverage. Like, they had already finished his coverage.
Right.
And, in TV and film, they have to get everybody's close-ups and stuff, and that takes a very, very long time. And a lot of times, the actor will just leave and you'll be reading with a stand-in or, a director or whatever.
Right.
And he stayed for every single person's coverage so they could actually have him to react to, which is just kind of a testament to how great he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he does pull out reactions from people. That's one thing about Jack Nicholson figures. So.
Yeah.
So let's go into, the layout of the play. Most people know the plot structure, but go ahead, for those who don't know, and give us kind of the layout of what's going on.
Okay, well, basically it starts out with two Marines being accused of murder. Again, they were hazing one of their own, and it goes bad. Kid dies, and myself and Annie are two lawyers who were brought in for the Judge Advocate General's Department, JAG Corps, as it were, to represent these Marines, one of which is played by young Daniel Salazar here.
Yep.
And what looks like an open and shut case begins to grow in importance and up the chain of command. So it gets pretty important pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, Daniel Caffey, that's the role you play, Blaine. Tell us about him. He doesn't seem to be the most motivated legal scholar in the world.
I think that's fair to say.
You could say that.
He's very laid back. He is the son of a very successful and important lawyer who fought a lot of very important fights. And who has passed away. So he's always been in the shadow of his father. And I think he's kind of working on personality and charm, and he has a great track record of plea bargaining, and he's never actually been in a courtroom. So when this case is thrust upon him with Annie's character, like basically pressuring my character into taking the case, he's really stepping up and growing up throughout the process of the play.
Now, in the movie, his father actually did some civil rights work in the South, because that comes out with one of the lieutenants at Guantanamo, who may not have favored that that approach at the time. So let's go through some of the other characters. Private Loudon Downey, who is playing him? And give us his kind of an overview of who he is.
Well, you represent Mr. Downey.
I do represent Mr. Downey. Yeah, so Downey is one of the two who have been accused of murder, and he's rather quiet. He doesn't say a lot in the show, but he... I'm trying to think of a good way to describe it.
He's the less vocal of the two Marines.
He's the less vocal of the two. And
shy.
And, yeah, he's just...
Kind of does what he's told.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a follower. He's just kind of like, we'll take the order, do the thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that Joanne, who I play, sees in him that he really doesn't have anyone fighting for him. And he doesn't have the mental capacity or the skills to be able to fight for himself. And so she really kind of takes him under her wing and, you know...
Played by young Carter Callahan, who is actually, I'm not sure exactly how old he is, but he looks very young, very fresh, and like him standing, at the stand testifying is very dramatic.
Yeah, he's fabulous.
It's a lot of fun to act with.
Throughout most of the movie, Downey looks like a deer in the headlights. He just has no idea what's going on. He followed orders. He doesn't understand any of this.
Well,
and
no
something
idea.
This play revisits over and over and over again is that we're talking about 18-year-old kids who are, following orders and
looking to belong. They're looking to be a part of, and the Marine Corps gives them
taught
that
not
sense.
To think for themselves in certain ways.
Sure.
Definitely.
So let's go into Joanne Galloway. She seems to be motivated, but at least in the movie, she was kind of tucked off to the side because she spent, 2 years plea bargaining a traffic case or something like that?
Yeah, she's not much of a litigator. She did not do well. She had 6 cases her first year, and she didn't win any of them.
Yeah.
So, the thing about her is she has an incredible instinct and an incredible gut, and she's very, very driven. And she's actually the one who kind of gets the ball rolling. She finds this case that would otherwise have just been buried and never seen the light of day, and thinks, maybe there's something more than meets the eye here, and takes it in and wants to get put on the defense, and finally kind of works her way into being on the defense. And she's in a kind of a weird place because she doesn't love Caffey, but she needs Caffey because Caffey is an amazing litigator, and she doesn't have that skill. And it's been really, really fun to explore. It's also been really interesting to be one woman of 17 men on a stage. I've never had that experience before, so it's quite a responsibility.
It really is.
To represent all the women in one. But no, she's fabulous. She speaks her mind. She's driven. She's passionate. She, sometimes to a fault, sometimes she goes a little far and doesn't think before she speaks, but she really is kind of the driving force of this, who kind of keeps everybody on track.
So do you get to strenuously object in this?
I do get to strenuously. Oh. I strenuously object.
There you go. Because that
and
makes
I get
all
a little
the
grief
in
for
the
it.
World. She seems like a character who has good moral instincts, but not good strategic instincts. She is not somebody who you
She's
want
kind
in the
of
corporate
the
boardroom.
Yeah,
you know?
I think, though, if you cut to 20 years after this, I think we would find her being an incredible litigator.
Yeah, because she definitely learned a few things on this case.
Absolutely, and I think I think their relationship would probably continue, and they would continue to learn a lot from each other. You find out very early in the play that these two people need each other very badly.
We are literally each missing missing what the other has.
Yeah. Right, exactly. It's like pieces in a puzzle.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I have the passion.
As annoying as that would be.
So how about Captain Isaac Whitaker? He's the one who, and he's just brief in this, but he's the one who sends Galloway over to take care of this.
Yes, that's played by Bill Pugh, who's my boss. I think he shares a little bit of Caffey's laid back nature and is a little taken aback by Galloway's aggressive.
Uh-huh. Well, and he's also somebody who doesn't want to make waves in. In the Marine Corps or in the Navy, in the Judge Advocate General. So he kind of wants us all to go away. And, of course, because of Galloway, it doesn't go away.
Right.
So
you're welcome.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's all your fault. Now, Jack Ross, who in the movie was played by Kevin Bacon, but we got Logan Sledge.
So yeah, our
top billing.
Our local Kevin Bacon. Right. Yeah. Logan is great. He's a staple in the theater around here, and hot shot over at Centenary teaching the students and stuff. And he's just a great actor. And I love one of the things that Annie was talking about earlier about the Jack Nicholson sticking around for a couple of days to give the actor something to work on. I think it really highlights how much of an ensemble show this is. You can't just do it with me running around, spouting these speeches. It's like it takes this team, and it's so great to be able to work with Daniel or Annie and then look across and argue with Logan and have Don Hooper standing there. It's like this is an amazing cast, and I've done enough shows in this area to know that we've really got the cream of the crop working on this, and I'm excited.
Yeah, it feels now, really good.
Captain Markinson, he was one of the most interesting ones in the movie for me because he had all the gist. Unfortunately, he decides to not go forward with it all. He checks out. So
yeah, that's played by Jim Coles in our show, and he's between he and Annie's character, they are kind of the moral compass, I think, of like this is wrong. We need to do something, and.
But thank God for him, or we wouldn't.
Yeah, we wouldn't win.
I'm not saying good of a win.
No spoilers, but he helps us out.
He helps us out a little bit before he decides to.
And how about the famous Nathan Jessup, Lieutenant Colonel Neeson?
Yes.
He was on his way up in the armed services, and that was the foil for you all because nobody wanted to see him brought down,
right.
No matter what he did, and yet you guys bring it out.
Yep.
So
Colonel Jessup is played by Don Hooper, who is the head of the Centenary Theater Department and has been around doing theater, or usually behind the scenes, for decades.
Hasn't been on stage since like 2005, I think.
Yeah. Well, he kills this. Yeah. We had a preview last night, and the reactions from the audience of him getting to do his big iconic, you can't handle the truth, and you could feel it. And he's intimidating.
Yeah,
I don't know if
definitely.
You guys know Don, but he's a good
scary guy.
It's funny. I came
character.
In a little bit later to the rehearsal process, and they were already kind of running through the show, and I didn't really get to meet Don before we started the run through. And then when he is on stage, he's just this big scary guy. You're just kind of like, ooh. And then after the run, he comes over and he's like, hey, so nice to meet you. And I was like, oh wow, you're just like, he looks completely different on stage and off stage, because on stage he's got this, he just carries so much with him, and then offstage he's just so nice and light and cheerful, and it's a testament to how great he is.
Yeah. And of course Jack Nicholson pulls that character off, and he's so intimidating. I mean, as soon as you meet him in the very early scenes, you're like, I don't like this guy. Because he's got something up his sleeve, and he's a dirty player,
and you don't want to mess with him.
Right, exactly.
I think what's kind of fun about this too is that Sorkin is such a good writer, and I'm not actually comparing him to Shakespeare, but very much like when you go and see Hamlet or you see any Shakespeare play over and over and over with different actors and stuff, you see a completely different
They bring out a different quality to it.
And nobody is comparing Don Hooper to Jack Nicholson on a daily basis, but they both do this part differently, but perfectly in their own way.
Right.
And I think that's what's going to be really fun for people, is to see a movie or see a play of something that they are familiar with, but that is different. Yes, I am daily compared to Tom Cruise. that's not true, actually. But I think that we will pull something different from the text that I think people will get a kick out of.
Yeah, it's a variation on a theme that I think is really cool.
I think everyone's really perfectly placed as well as far as casting goes. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone really, really, really fits their role.
Yeah.
Like, to a T.
Now, one of the nemesis was played by, I'm drawing a blank, and that's Kendrick in the movie, and that's Sutherland.
It was Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland. Yeah. I kept thinking Donald, and I knew it was his son. So,
in the family.
He plays a good, nasty person.
He sure does.
Sure does.
And you know who else does is young Josh Talley.
Josh Talley.
We did a play together this last summer. We did Of Mice and Men, and we were going at each other in that, too. We didn't like each other very much in that play, either. And so we're getting it down to a science.
Yeah.
He's good at poking me in the chest and hurting my feelings.
Yeah.
Kiefer's one of those interesting actors because he can go from good to bad. I mean, you can love him in one movie and just want to strangle him in another. And that's what a good actor does is he brings out those emotions in the audience, you know, and brings them out. So now the two key characters, you get to play one, and that is a Lance Corporal Harold Dawson. So you get a key role because you are the most vocal of the two accused Marine officers. So tell us about who is Lance Corporal Harold
Dawson. So Lance Corporal Dawson, for me, is like a true and true Marine who really lives by the code and is, you know, all he's ever wanted to do is be a Marine. And I think, you know, being in this situation is really tough for him because all he's ever wanted to do is be a Marine. And him being Marine has gotten him in trouble, and not just once, but, you know, twice. Yeah. And it's spoken before that him not following orders has gotten him in trouble. So I think him following this code red has kind of gotten him into a little tricky situation. And I think he's kind of struggles with that, especially with, like, you know, Daniel trying to push him to make a deal, and he doesn't want to make the deal at all. You know, he's like, no, I'm going to live by my code. Either I was right or wrong, and I'm going to live with the decision I made.
So. He just can't win.
Can't
win.
I can't.
You follow your heart, you get in trouble.
Yep.
You follow orders, you get in trouble.
Which I think it makes it really tough for him to decide what he needs to do.
Yeah, that's the dichotomy there. He is following his heart. He doesn't want to hurt this young man, but he also wants to be a good Marine, and he knows in a combat situation or in any situation in the Marines that you have to follow orders, you have to work with the team, you have to kind of, you know, get the mission done no matter what. And he gets the mission done, and then he gets hung out to dry.
Yep.
And in part because they couldn't make it go away. Couldn't make the death go away. That just didn't disappear, so they ended up pinning it on him with bogus evidence, I might add. I don't want to give it away, but I just did it. So tell us about the cast and crew. Who's behind the scenes? You're doing lighting, too.
Yes, so I've been Stage Center's the resident lighting designer for the past 6 years. I recently moved to Chicago, but I'm actually back in town to do this show, and I'm actually really, really excited to get this one out here as far as lighting goes, like putting it up. Usually, you know, we put our show up in about 4 or 5 days, and it's a lot of work, but it's a really good payoff, especially when you have a good team working together. Seth Taylor, who usually does all of our set designs, and Jared Watson, our artistic director. I think all of us are really good about collaborating with each other. We basically know each other like the back of the hand when it comes to, like, you know, getting up a design, and I think we're really good at communicating. So,
and the design on this is really super cool. Like, you know, we've been prepping. I've been learning these lines for months, and so, like, to see what these guys came up with, it's not what I had in my head. It's different. It's artistic. It's theatrical. It's in your face, and I think it in a way brings something new out of the play. And this has been a dream project for Jared Watson for a while. We've talked about it many times, and he brought it up, and I'm like, well, that's a dream part for me, so let's do that.
Yeah. Let's make that happen.
So now, visually, you've got the courtroom, obviously, on stage. What are the other the scenic things that we're going to see, that would be familiar to those who have seen the movie?
Well, like I say, it's new, and it's not trying to recreate in any way the realities of the movie or anything like that. It's much more black box kind of theater where, and the script is structured in such a way where Kathy will be outside having a conversation at a baseball diamond, and then he'll pivot, and he'll be in his office, and then we'll turn across the way, and Jessup will be having a conversation with his men in Cuba. So it's a very fluid, fast-moving. Honestly, that's one of the things that I love the most about the script is how fast it goes. It's very in-your-face. It's very scene to scene to scene, and it takes some really good actors to do this text. Like, it's just bada 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 bing, and then you change on a dime, and it's a whole new thing. And in order to keep the audience with you, you got to be on your game. So mm-hmm. it's exciting, yeah. and it's like a sport out there.
It is.
Definitely is.
So rhythm and timing are yeah. are it.
Yeah. And lighting, too. Lighting plays a huge mm-hmm. part in telling us where, telling the audience and us, too, yeah. we're trying to figure it out, but where we are environmentally. Lighting plays a huge part in that.
And Jared has put a ton of music into the project too, which was surprising to me. Yeah. And I think it works really, really well. Yeah. But I'm like, oh, music? Really? And this?
Yeah.
And it's great.
It works.
It's a very interesting choice with what he's chosen, but it really fits. And it really gives the show a new edge, I think. Like, it's, you know, for
now,
sure.
Will this be playback music from,
yes.
from the speakers? Okay.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And some of it's like interpretive and some of it is, you know, source, you know, but it's. Yeah, it's a theatrical experience. You will be in the middle of these events as they unfurl, and hopefully edge your seat kind of entertainment.
Yeah.
So, as an audience member, you're actually members of the court. You're the jury.
You absolutely. Are the jury. That's right.
We play directly to you, as a matter of fact, which is weird yeah. as an actor.
Yeah.
Making eye contact with people in the audience.
I'm turning out and looking at the people to try to convince them, you know, that my clients are innocent, and I see somebody I know, and I'm like, oh. Don't go there.
Yeah.
Stay. You're Daniel Caffey.
Yeah,
right
the
last
moment.
Night was really interesting with it.
Yeah. Tonight, my it's mom's going to be there. My girlfriend's going to be there. And it's going to be like, don't look at anybody
right.
that's going to take this train off the rails, right?
You probably shouldn't say hi, mom, right in the middle.
No,
right.
Probably
yeah,
not.
There you go. So, all right, let's get down to brass tacks. How do people find out more information about the production and the times and stuff like that?
This is a very good question. I had this all on my phone just a minute ago, Bill. I don't know.
I got you. So you can, you know, email stagecenter@stagecenterboxoffice@gmail.com, or you can go to our website at stagecenterla.com, and you can find all the information about the show. I know that our Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday are now sold out.
Oh,
so
okay.
We have about a little around 50 tickets left for the Saturday matinee.
And there are wait lists for the other
and
shows.
There are wait lists, yeah. Know.
Okay.
Yeah,
Saturday
sure.
matinee, but this is the big ticket.
So will this be playing next week as well then?
This is it.
So one week.
Oh, this
thing.
Is
one
it.
Week.
Okay.
Because
five
so many
done.
Of the actors are from out of town, the three
right.
of us sitting here, it's like that's it. So Saturday matinee, that's the last time to do it. We added that show to accommodate. So, but we're really excited that
yeah.
the community is this excited about
yeah.
the show because we're ready to put it on for them.
So we'll probably have all 50 tickets sold after this.
I well, hope so.
Come on down.
Well, any final thoughts you want to share with the audience?
You know, I'm just really excited to be doing this with Stage Center, and A Few Good Men is an amazing show, and it's different than the movie, but everything you like about the movie will still be there. So I hope people come and check it out.
Yeah.
For sure.
And the good guys win. I'm not going to tell
Spoiler.
You who those are. So, well, Annie, Blaine, and Daniel, I want to thank you very much for stopping by
thank
today.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure's ours.
You betcha. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight with Annie Funky and Blaine Weaver and Daniel Salazar, who joined me in our Knoll Foundation studios to discuss a new production by Center Stage of Aaron Sorkin's A Few Good Men, which opens tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Engine Room at Art Station, with performances tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday night at 7:30, and Saturday and Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. The Engine Room is located at 801 Crockett Street in downtown Shreveport. More information can be found online at stagecenterla.com or 318-218-9978. That's 318-218-9978. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.